And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman and co-host, and with me today is Mike Gregg. This is another episode of the FFC Weekly Roundup. We'll be focusing on more form-related topics to discuss and debate, along with hearing from you, the listener, as we have a section of the show called Ask the Co-host, which I posted on the Facebook page for the show. And we do have some very interesting topics for Mike to debate and discuss today. We'll always be looking back at the recent 1-1 draw for Fulham against Nottingham Forest and be previewing the massive derby with QPR at the end of the show, which will now include the segment called What the Managers Are Saying. I'll be reading quotes from both managers heading into this match, and each one of them has some very interesting things to share. But before we do anything, I always have to welcome my co-host back to the show, Mr. Gregg. How you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Yeah, doing really well. Just started watching the Ryder Cup, and the Americans have started well. But I'm going to take an hour out now to talk about our favourite subject, which is, of course, Fulham Football Club. Then I'll get back to the golf later.
Mike, I don't know if you're aware of this, but it is a huge story here. I'll just say this quickly. I guess the European team were being heckled yesterday. I don't know if this made it over to you. And some of the Ryder Cup members of the European team grabbed the fan out of the stands who was heckling them and actually challenged him to hit a putt and put down $100 down next to where he was putting. And the heckler actually hit the putt. I don't know if this made it over there, but it's been a huge story over here.
No, it did make it over here. And it was a good putt. And it was the center of the hole. And, you know. Let's hope that's not a sign of things to come. But for this weekend and this weekend only, you're all the bad guys, this Russ, over on that side of the pond.
I understand that, Mike. Definitely understand that. All right, enough talking about golf. You'll have your golf fix after we're done here. Let's now start by talking about the Nottingham Forest 1-1 draw that was on the road the other night. And I watched the replay. You've watched the replay. And I'm just going to start by saying I was actually very encouraged by what I watched. You know, again, I listened to the match, but when I watched it, I actually felt better about it after watching it. I'm curious where you fall on this. So let's start with your overall view of this result and what you watched as well, because you watched the replay.
Yeah, well, I mean, I listened to the whole game by Gentleman Jim, as usual, and you know, read the reports and spoke to a couple of people who went, and they all said it was a good performance. And having watched it now, last night, the whole game, it was definitely a better performance than we've done recently. We certainly had chances to score. Their goalkeeper made a few saves. But on the other side as well, you know, early on, they had chances and, of course, took the lead as well. So I think we took a little while to get into the game. You know, we were in the ascendancy for most of the second half and could have snatched it at the end. I mean, it was good to see players like Martin come on and look a lot sharper. But yeah, you know, away, we're still undefeated. I've seen us there the last two seasons get absolutely, you know, battered. So a difficult place for us to go, and we've come back with a point. And while we could do with a win, given our recent results, you cannot complain about a point away from home. And hopefully, you know, players have said go back to basics, or Tunnicliffe's interview, and Savisa's saying pretty much the same. And I think they're a bit more solid. And but then, like I say, we stretched it a bit in the second half. So having watched it, fair result, but we could have come away with a win.
Definitely, Mike. And listen, it's very difficult to tell on the replay. I want to get your thoughts about these two disallowed goals. It's hard to tell. But the point I'm going on this is that, listen, we have struggled scoring goals, and I know that there are two disallowed goals, but they still put it in the back of the net. In both situations, both goals, potential goal scorers, because they were disallowed, thought they got good goals. So it's not like the defense let up. These were both situations that, unfortunately, they were offside. So I want to get your thoughts on both of these situations. Were you encouraged, even though the goals were disallowed?
Well, yeah, because it at least means we're hitting the target. You know, it's not 20 shots and 18 of them going wide. It's good that the ball's in the net, but obviously the players, you know, need to be aware of where they are. But having looked at the replays, they're very, very tight calls. And it's a pity for Aluko because he could do with a goal. But then, you know, we had other chances. Smith's header was an absolute, you know, for someone who's in the team, who the people who like Smith say his header in is his best asset. And he had a chance to score there and he should have done better. It was a great save by the keeper.
Sure.
But just as Martin should have done well with his headers recently, it just shows you, you know, how hard it is, you know, to get a goal. And we're struggling a bit, but, you know, Kearney pops up at the end. His performance was a little bit more improved. I'd never made him man of the match, I have to say, but it was certainly better than some of them that I've seen recently. Like last Saturday, for an hour, we were doing fine. We were creating chances. And, of course, the next step up from creating chances is getting them on target and getting them in the net. And we were doing that slightly offside, but it's an improvement, you know, game on game.
That's the way that I saw it. And, I feel bad for Aluko. Like you mentioned, not only was it the one that was offside, but he had a wonderful chance that he just could not convert. The beginning of the second half, if he scores that, maybe we have a different match. That's someone that desperately needs a goal. You mentioned Matt Smith. I could also say Chris Martin, but Sonny Aluko definitely needs a goal in the worst possible way. All right, Mike, who stood out for you in this match? I'm curious your thoughts, and then I'll share mine.
Okay, so I'm going to go with Parker and Tunnicliffe. As most people know, I'm not Parker's greatest fan, but, we maybe missed him a lot second half last week, and he came in. Tunnicliffe started in next to him, and I thought they both played really well. Tunnicliffe's like the water carrier of the side, and they both probed and broke up play and got involved in build up. So for me, it was the Parker Tunnicliffe combination that really stood out.
Those were two out of the three that stood out for me. I also want to mention Lucas Piazon because I thought he played well, Mike. I could potentially see what he could offer us. I'm curious your thoughts about his performance.
Yeah, he got involved quite a bit. And, he did well in the League Cup game the week before. And he's got a nice touch. Strength-wise, he's probably not the strongest, but... He's got some good skill and movement on him, and it's going to be interesting where they can find a place in the team for him. I mean, he was mainly on the left-hand side the other day, but he could probably play, you know, up top or any of the three positions behind the main striker. So, you know, he's only here on loan until January. It's a good chance for him to show his worth, and we've got an abundance of these type of players, and I think it's Jukanovic's job to find out which ones are the best in those positions. And I still think we're going to see some mixing and matching over the next few games until we actually get a settled sort of front three midfielders, if you like.
Yeah, Mike. You know, it's funny. It's something that I've talked with Emilio. A great deal about that we have many players that kind of have the same roles, similar types of players, and I think it's going to be down to Jukanovic to find the right pieces to play together. Piazon, I think, has a chance to be a regular contributor. I liked what I saw, and I also liked what I saw in the League Cup match as well. All right, Mike, let's now end talking about this match. Do you think this was a fair result getting the point, or do you think maybe Fulham should have gotten all 3 points?
We could have won, as I said, but I think overall, you know, given the couple of clear-cut chances they had, it was probably a fair result in the end, but we maybe just edged it 55-45 percentage-wise, if you like. But I'm happy with a draw, to be honest, just come away with that. And we really, you know, we'll talk about it later, but tomorrow is a key game following it.
Absolutely, Mike. I couldn't agree with you more. I look forward to ending the show talking to you about the derby against QPR. But before we do that, we have to now enter the Cottage Talk Roundtable. And I'm glad that you mentioned Ryan Tunnicliffe, because I want to talk about him in a little bit more detail here. Because I've been thinking about this lately, and I think I talked about this on a prior show. Do you think we undervalue what Ryan Tunnicliffe can offer Fulham and what he has offered already?
Well, it's interesting. I don't know if this question has been raised because of what I tweeted yesterday. I had someone come to me and say, you know, how well do we do with Tunnicliffe in the side or not? And so I looked back. And so since we've been relegated, the two seasons and the 10 games now, so we've played 102 games, and Tunnicliffe has started 47 of them. And over those 47 games, we've got 65 points, which works out about 1.38 points per game. And then when he hasn't started, which is 55 games, we've got 52 points, which is 0.95 points per game. So that's that's quite a difference in the points. I mean, if you played it over the season, if he started and averaged the same, we'd end up with 65 points, which is, about mid-table. And if it was the other games, which he hadn't started, we'd end up with 52 points, which is just above relegation. So is he undervalued? I like him. He should really be doing better than he does sometimes. He's got rid of lots of the tricks that he likes to try. And if he just keeps his job simple, disrupts play, gets the ball, gives it to the more creative players. And then he has that surging run that he can do as well on occasions. Then he's a very useful player. So I think he is a little bit undervalued. I think people look at him and, you know, he's come from Man United. He doesn't have the skill of, say, Brian Ruiz, which, you know, that type of player. But he's a hard-working grafter, and I think he showed last week in the League Cup game when he was captain and he played it right back. He's a useful player to have at the club, and he took his chance on Tuesday, and I think he'd be very hard done by if he doesn't start tomorrow.
I totally agree with that, Mike, and I have to be honest here. Your tweets gave me the idea, so I have to give you credit for that. Yeah. Those tweets were interesting, so that led me to want to discuss it with you. Very interesting tweets that you shared. You're great with stats, my friend, and I'm glad that you mentioned them, but also got me to think, well, do we undervalue his importance? And let's talk about this a little bit more, because, you know, I've said that there are certain matches where he should start or feature, you know, maybe coming off the bench. But the bigger question is, should he be playing regularly? And if he was, Mike, who should he be partnering with? Should it be basically a rotation of McDonald and Parker? Because is this the answer to not playing McDonald and Parker together, to potentially play, say, Tunnicliffe in some matches and maybe Johansson in others? Is this a way to break it up maybe a little bit?
Well, the thing is, since we got relegated and, you know, he's getting older every year, it's time for someone to... it's time for a manager, but it's also time for the players who are here to step up and say, you know, I should have one of those positions. So at the moment, in central midfield, that sort of defensive or, you know, the two in midfield, you have Parker, you have Tunnicliffe, you have McDonald, you've got the invisible man, which is Christensen at the moment, who even when he plays seems to be on the right or the left. But really it needs someone like Christensen or Tunnicliffe to say, look, this time Parker retired, here's your slippers, you know, move on. You know, the future is, at the moment, the future is McDonald plus
sure.
one other, really. You know, that's
right.
What you've got to look at. And Parker can't keep going the way he is. And, you know, Parker and McDonald did very well at the beginning of the season. And, but, you know, even then there were people still saying, you know, it's fine, you know, holding players away from home, but at home we need to be a bit more forward thinking. And I think that's certainly bared fruit now. We can see that Parker McDonald at home, when teams sit back, is not what we want. Now away, I don't have too much of an issue at the moment with those two, But if those two aren't playing, then somebody else has to come in. And at the moment, Tunnicliffe is that option because, you know, Johansson has been tried there. And I thought he played well in the League Cup game. But again, you know, last week he was seen by a lot of fans as being one of the problems of why we collapsed. You know, he had his bad debut. So he's going to take time settling in. But yeah, you know, it's his versatility as well. You know, he has shown now he can be that right-sided defender if needed. And he can be that central midfielder. That I think one of his best performances was Sunderland away in the Cup when he sat and did nothing more than break
that play.
Passed the ball, and I thought, oh, this game is the making of him. He is, you know, he's going to come away from this. Managers are going to realise that's his role, and it's not quite worked out for him. And you know, but let's hope, you know, I'm hoping he's going to start tomorrow, and he can put in a good enough performance because really, we cannot continue with Parker and McDonald. So someone else has to be an option, and McDonald's been off form as well. So then you've got to hope Johansson or Christensen gets a chance and they improve and take it. So we've got options, but it's just finding, like we have to find with the three midfielders in front, we have to find the right blend of the two players there. And Tunnicliffe's good enough, I think, for us to you know, to be one of those players.
I agree, Mike. I'm going to throw in one name that I don't think is going to feature too much, but I could see a future for him, and that's and if I'm saying it wrong, I apologize. Dennis Adeniran has impressed me in the League Cup matches. He actually played in the last match, so congratulations to him. Do you think he has a future in central midfield?
Well, yeah, I mean, that is his role, absolutely. And I, like many, was surprised to see him actually on the bench. But to be fair, you know, that's deserved. But again, I go back, you know, Christensen really should be that player who's on the bench in front of him.
I agree.
So has he overtaken him in the pecking order? And if he has, you know, that's a real surprise. But Dennis is a really good player, but he's only 17. But to be fair, you know, we've seen Sessegnon do well at 16. And clearly you kind of see something in him. He does have a lot of strength and he has a good burst of pace to go through players. And I'm certainly not, as you know, I'm certainly not against a manager willing to give young players a chance. My concern is we just need to nurture them and bring them through slowly instead of dumping them all in one go, which is what we've done over the last few years. And players have suffered both in performance, being pushed too early, and also, let's be honest, with fans being not patient enough with them. But no, he definitely has a chance. I think, you know, I'll be surprised if he becomes any kind of a regular, but he certainly, you know, games here and there, he's worth putting on the bench, and probably away from home is possibly the best place.
That's a good point, Mike, and honestly, I don't see him hurting you, especially even if he's just included and comes off the bench. He seems to have a good amount of poise for such a young player, just like Sessegnon. But you have to be careful with him, and I like the way that you are looking at the situation. You could see him featuring a little bit, but bring him on slowly, not just throw him to the wolves, as we would say over here. All right, Mike, let's move on. Let's talk about what's going to be happening on Saturday. This is actually a big deal. Share with me your thoughts on the George Cohen statue being unveiled before the QPR match.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's really good news, and I've always been in favour of the statue from when I first heard about it. I do have a problem with how the club are unveiling the news, but also unveiling the statue. It seems to be on a need-to-know basis, and none of us have really been kept in the loop until this week. And so, you know, it's maybe not enough fanfare has been made by the club on this occasion, and which is disappointing, but you know, hopefully we'll all get a chance to see it tomorrow, and I hope it's a good looking statue. I've not actually seen a picture of it or anything like that, but yeah, no, I mean, you can't, one of the things we criticise the club of is its lack of looking back in our history. Now, I know there's a complicated sort of history with regards to this statue and who started it, who took it over, who's paying for it, all this kind of stuff. But to actually have the statue within the grounds of the club is a good thing, and I wish the club would do more sort of history-related stuff, because one of the problems, I think, is the club doesn't have a kind of historian, and I've mentioned that before on the show, and they need to do more to sort of interact with the fans on that basis, I feel.
Mike, I totally agree with you on that, and if anyone's interested, please do check out the article earlier in this week by David Kidd in The Mirror. Definitely check that out. He had a very interesting article about George Cohen and the statue, so I highly recommend you reading it. I really enjoyed some of the quotes from George and the talk about the statue and the 66 team, you know, the World Cup winning England team. So check it out. All right, Mike, we have to talk about this. Do you think the recent scandal to QPR manager Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink will have any impact on the upcoming match on Saturday?
It's going to have an impact on the fact that I'm sure some Fulham fans are going to give him a right ribbing. But, you know, the question is, has it distracted from their build-up? And I doubt it has done that much. Most players don't take much notice of what's going on. And you only hope that it's not Hasselbaink and the players, or the players getting behind him to produce something extra. But I don't think it's going to have a huge effect, quite frankly, unless something happens over the next, you know, between now and kickoff tomorrow, where
right.
Hasselbaink is suspended by the club, or something else comes out, or that kind of thing, really. But I mean, this whole week has been a dark week for football, really, with regards, you know, the revelations from the Telegraph, and it's not unexpected for those of us who follow football. It's the players and that, they all get huge amounts of money, and some managers get paid decent amounts of money as well, but your run-of-the-mill assistant managers in the Championship and lower, they get paid huge amounts compared to me and you probably, Russ, but they don't get huge amounts, and that's probably why they fall into these traps. And of course, the biggest scalp this week is Sam Allardyce, and you know, that's just stupid by him. Someone on £3 million a year just feels he has to do another deal instead of concentrating on the job in hand. But one of the things that's worried me today with Hasselbaink is he's been interviewed, and I don't know if you've seen it, but he's spoken about how the fact that he's non-domicile here, which means for tax reasons he can earn money and not pay any tax on it in certain ways. So straight away, that makes me think, oh, yeah, you're always looking at ways of doing something to probably cheat is the wrong word, but to, you know, make sure you're not doing everything above board. So I think he's going to have problems, but getting back to the game, I don't think it's going to impact too much on once the players cross that line.
Okay, very good, Mike, but I think he should expect to hear some stuff from the Fulham supporters, like
definitely.
You mentioned. I definitely think he's going to hear it. But as an impact on the match, I don't think it's going to have much impact on their players. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. All right, Mike, I have some very interesting topics for you for Ask the Co-Host. I had people specifically ask for you because I put your name on the post. So some of these will have your name right on there. So let's start with Roger
okay.
Lewis. This is what Roger – and the follow-up, I'm also going to share – a question from Trevor Peckham because it goes along with, I'm sorry, Packham. It goes along with what Roger had to say. So here it is. Does Mike feel that Martin is just a stopgap loan until the club can sign a striker permanently who will fit into Savica's system, or does he think that we will sign him permanently in January? And then, like I mentioned, Trevor then followed that up as, is Martin a player that Slav wanted or the board wanted? Will there still be a big signing if a striker in the next window, can we bloody because we bloody need I'm butchering this, Mike, because we bloody need one. Sorry, Trevor, that was a Goldman on top of another Goldman. All right, Mike, thoughts on what Roger and Trevor had to share?
Okay, I mean, I think it's obvious that there were other strikers that we were after. And, our view, our image of what we wanted was a sort of pacey, strong, marauding striker. And Martin isn't quite that, is he? But for me, he does fit a little bit into what Savisa's looking for, is in the fact that, he's the point in the middle of the pitch at the top, where he gets the ball and lays it off, and the three busy bee midfielders, as I call them, should be looking to pick up the balls that he lays off. And he also, he had a good shot the other day, and he looks as if he's getting fitter and more used to the players around and their runs they're going to make. They're going to get used to the kind of runs and his positioning as well. So I think he's certainly good enough be in a team which is challenging for the playoffs. He's shown that with Derby and, with your Derby contacts, most of them rate Martin. He's certainly a good championship striker. And I think I think his problem is obviously that he hasn't scored, but also I think he's arrived unfit and he's not the big signing that people wanted. People saw Ross sold for 12 million quid or whatever it was, and they wanted that money spent, 9, 10 million on a striker. When in fact, that money has been spent on buying Hozabad, Sigurdsson, and probably Johansson. There's 10
Correct.
Million quid almost spent. So, and I said on the day that we signed him, or the day after, I thought it was a loan partly on transfer deadline day. It's all about getting the paperwork through in time. And it does seem as if we were after someone else. It didn't quite happen, and Martin was second, third, fourth, fifth, whatever choice. And they couldn't get the full paperwork done, hence he's joined on loan with an option to buy. So, in a way, it's a good. We can try and test him, and if it works out at the end of the season, we could probably buy him in January, but at the end of the season, we have an option. So I'd be surprised if we actually option him in January, no matter what's happening, because I'm sure we've got the option at the end of the year. But I'd also expect us to still be looking for a striker if we're in the mix, if we're in that kind of eighth position or better to help push us on. Which I think will take us into the next question you're going to ask me, but I think he is someone he wanted. He might not have been the first choice, but he's here now, and he is a better player than Smith and Woodrow, and I think he offers a lot more. And he's a player, I look back on his records last week, Russ, and he's a player who scores in batches, so he will score 6-7 goals in like 8 or 9 games, then go about another 6 or 7 without, and then he'll score again. But in that time, he makes lots of assists. So that's his kind of record. That's the way he goes. And I'm just hoping that this run he's having at the beginning with us is where he's not scoring any goals, and then he's going to get a load coming up because we've got some difficult games coming. But I think Slav is happy with him, and he hasn't really got much choice, has he? He's got to get on with it, and but we did see the other day that he's willing to drop him and play Smith in front. And actually, they both played together, up to the end of the game as well.
Yeah, they absolutely did. And, like you mentioned, Mike, the people that I talked to at Derby County tell me that he should come good for us. And it's just a matter of time. He will get his teammates involved. And once that starts happening on a more consistent basis, you're going to see his assists go up, and then hopefully you're going to see his goals go up with him scoring as well. So I say be a little bit more patient with Chris Martin. I think it's going to pay off. Those are just my 2 cents on that. All right, like you mentioned, there is a little bit of a follow-up question, kind of, that goes along with what we're talking about, and that's Andrew Acton Adams wanted me to ask you this. Do we have an idea as to where the club now sits in terms of financial fair play? How much money is available for the January window, Mike?
Okay, so, this is always going to be a bit back of the fag packet sort of figures. I think we've agreed something like an 8 or 9 million fee for Martin. And again, I'm saying that's at the end of the season. And but it is that kind of figure I think we have available. So somewhere in that sort of 5 to 8 million we could spend without having to recoup anything. But that's only if we continue, you know, if we're in that kind of top part of the league and challenging for promotion. I think that's within our spending power. And I think if we're in a position to push on in January, there is leeway to actually spend more. But if you're looking to stay within the one-year figure you're allowed, then I would say 5 to 8 million we could spend in January, and that's without buying Martin. That's keeping
right.
us alone for the end of the season. So, yeah, we're in that kind of area, I think. But it is all back at the bag packet, as I say. So there is money to spend. I do think it is there.
Okay, very good there, Mike. All right, let's now go to Gary Cooper. As Parker and McDonald are a like-for-like player, does Mike think, with the ban for McDonald, that we will see a welcome change in our play in the center of the park for the next couple of games?
Well, as I spoke about earlier, you know, Parker and McDonald, I think we all got a bit fed up with those two really playing together. You know, we're having a bad run. They're two defensive players. And away from home, yes, but at home, no. So, you know, players have to take their chance, or teams change through injuries and suspension. I go back to Andy Johnson getting injured and Zoltan Gera having to play up top or just, you know, behind Zamora. And that was the best thing that ever happened to Fulham in one way. And so you can say with McDonald getting suspended, that's broken up the Parker and McDonald duo, given Tunnicliffe a chance, and he took it, as far as I'm concerned, during the week. So hopefully we will now see us you know, progress without having to use Parker and McDonald together. And but there will be games when they play, but for me it's away games only. And McDonald has to improve, because for me he's been very poor his last three games, very hesitant, doesn't look happy. But he's shown already he's a decent player, and he offers a lot to us, and he will come back. But yeah, I mean, Gary's right. I think, you know, we don't want to see those two together too much, because the other options give us a bit more dynamism in the midfield. It's a long afternoon.
No problem, Mike.
Yeah, so, you know, Johansson, Tunnicliffe, all those guys give us a bit more than both of those together. And like I said, you know, people have to take their chance when injuries and suspensions come along.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, final question. I think you'll find this one interesting because we've talked about it. So this is from James Eade. Everyone is questioning Kearney's recent performances, but he is the only player that managed to find the back of the net. Is Savisa making a mistake not utilizing him behind the striker? Mike?
I think we're all agreed we want to see Kearney in the middle. But the question really is, you know, is he the right player to behind the striker? At the moment, we're seeing Aluku play there. And, you know, he's getting involved a lot. Kearney has been found out, if you like, by a couple of teams recently, you know, stopping from getting inside, getting the ball on his left foot and having a shot. He drifted in at the back the other night for a goal, which was good to see. I think it's certainly worth giving him a game or two behind Martin, behind Smith, give him a bit more of a free role. But I think while Aluko's around, he's the one who's going to stay in that central position, because then you have the option of quickly changing to a 4-4-2 without making too many changes. But Kearney, I've been critical of. I think he has just drifted in a few games, and that's not just by being marked out of it. You know, if you're having trouble with the team you're playing, you've got to find ways of getting over that. And for me, he was disappointing in a couple of games, and I would have dropped him last Saturday, quite frankly. But, you know, he showed the other day. He can. He's our top goal scorer. He has popped up. But he also needs to work a bit harder. He needs to improve his right foot and be able to use that. Otherwise, he'll find himself stuck in the Championship forever because he's, you know, he's a good player. He's got a lot of skill. But has he got that quality to play it in the Premier League? And I would say at the moment he'd get found out. If he's got found out in the Championship and being nullified, he'd get found out massively in the Premier League. So he needs to find ways of improving as a player. But for us, a couple of games. It's going to depend on Aluka and his availability, I think. But I think at the moment he's just going to be stuck out on the right with a little bit of a free roll, as we've seen in every game this season.
Okay. Very interesting there, Mike. All right, it's time to go to our preview, Rod. Just for time's sake, we are not going to be discussing what the managers are saying. I'm cutting that out. So we're going to go right into this preview, and I'm just going to share very quickly some information from WhoScored.com just to give you some backdrop on QPR. First of all, where we are on the table, Fulham are currently 12th. 3 victories, 5 draws, 2 losses. We've scored 9. We've given up 11. We're in a -2 goal differential and are on 14 points. QPR are 16th. 3 victories, 3 draws, 4 losses. They've scored 12. They've given up 16. They're on a -4 goal differential, and they're on 12 points. Again, this information from WhoScored.com just gives you some characteristics, their thoughts on QPR. Strengths, very strong shooting from direct free kicks, strong at attacking set pieces. Weaknesses, they are weak at all of these things. Keeping possession of the ball, defending set pieces, aerial duels, defending against long shots. Their style, play with width, control the game in the opposition's half, attacking down the left, play the offside trap. Just a little bit more information according to WhoScored.com. Left back Jake Bidwell could be out for up to 4 months after suffering a dislocated shoulder in Tuesday's draw against Burton. That is a massive loss for them. James Perch will not be back until after the international break, while Jack Robinson is also out. So center back Joel Lynch is likely to fill in at left back. Okay, that's just some information on injuries with QPR. They are dealing with injuries, but hey, so are Fulham. So I'm not cutting them any slack there. All right, Mike, let's get into this. Let's finish by really talking about this match. Who do you see as the key players in the derby tomorrow for Fulham?
Well, I'm gonna go with Parker because I expect him to start. And actually, the person we were just talking about, Kearney, he needs to give a good performance at home. Parker's going to be the captain. And if they can both produce, and we've shown when Kearney plays well, we play well. So it's going to be those two. And it's if they can find their way to control the midfield, but also for Kearney to get his shooting boots on and get his passing range and try and feed the strikers and the other midfielders and get them a chance. But it's interesting looking at the QPR stats. You know, it says that possession-wise, they're not very good, but they control the game in the opposition's half, so which makes me think they're very much a pressing side. And as we've shown, especially at home, when teams press us, our goalkeeper gets flustered and our defence gets a bit worried. So, I hope they've been working on ways around that or mixing and matching what they're going to do instead of 100% the goalkeeper has to, roll it out to somebody who's got 3 players around him or something. So it's going to be Parker and Kearney for me, absolutely key. And, they are missing a couple of key players and their form is not good. And, aerial duel-wise, if that's one of their weaknesses, then, you know, with the players we've got, we are a slightly bigger team than last year. We should be making the most of it. And they've had a couple of bad defeats, and I think it's a game where if you get a goal and then get a second, they're a team that collapses. And so we should be looking to reverse something like the hammering we had last week. Because I think, it's going to happen sooner or later. We're going to bash someone. And who better than the QPR who we do it to every year?
I'm there with you, Mike. And it's funny you talk about possession. I'll give you some stats from WhoScored.com. Possession, QPR 14th in the league at 49.5%, and Fulham are second at 57.5%. Passing success, Fulham are first in the league at 84.9%, and QPR are 18th at 69.9%. So that does tell you a little bit about their situation there. Shots, Fulham are fourth in the league, which is a little surprising at 14.4%, and QPR are all the way at 20th at 10.7%. So that gives you a couple statistics to look at. And one other that I want to mention, the long balls. You know, Fulham continue to be worst in the league with 66, and QPR are not that bad at 8th with 81, but short passes, Fulham are still first with 492 per game, and QPR are 18th at 304. So there is some different ways teams are playing. They both play, I believe, a 4-2-3-1, so that's interesting as well. All right, Mike, how do Fulham win this match tomorrow?
Scoring more goals than QPR. We've got to find the target. Like last week, you can have 20 shots and 2 on target. We've got to do what we did during the week, make their goalkeeper work, stop the ball going in the net. And also, I think just purely on our confidence-wise, I think we will let a goal in tomorrow. But whatever happens, we need to score first to actually win the game. I mean, it's an obvious stat. You know, a team that wins first majority of the time wins. But with our confidence, I think it's key. We're very edgy. The fans are very edgy at home at the moment. And their heads drop as soon as we let a goal in. So a good start, early goal, or even 2, and that's how we win the game.
Okay. I definitely agree with you. Early goal will make all the difference in the world. If you score 1 and potentially 2, this team could fold. I'm glad that you mentioned that, Mike. You know, if we really get them behind the 8-ball early, this hopefully could become a comfortable win. All right. What is your starting 11 for tomorrow, Mike?
Yes, I listened to Jokanović and read that it sounds like it's going to be pretty much the same squad from the other day. So it doesn't sound as if Kallis is back or Aiteanu's out until probably another couple of weeks. But my team tomorrow, it would be pretty much what was played the other day, but I would make a couple of changes. So it would be Button in goal, Adoree and Sessegnon as the fullbacks. If Maddle's fit, I'd bring him in for Ream. So I'd have Maddle and Sergesen at the back. Central midfield, Parker and Tunnicliffe. I see no reason to change that. I think McDonald's banned only one game, so he should come back into the 18. The three midfielders, Kearney and Aluku, or, you know, when we say midfielders, you know, central man behind the striker. And, yeah, the left sided one, I really want to see Hozabad start again. I don't know if he can play that position. But if not, then give Pearson another go, because he did fairly well during the week. But I want to somehow try and get Hozabad into the team. I mean, you could play him central and Aluko on the left. Because I think, you know, we're at home. We've got to attack them, take the game to them. So let's be a bit more offensive and add a bit of guile to what we've got. And then up front, I would go with Martin. So Smith, while he had a couple of chances the other day, I did think Martin looked sharper when he came on. I would go with Martin. So that's the 11 I would go with.
Okay. Mike, I just want to follow up. You mentioned McDonald. Doesn't he have a 3-match ban, or is it just a 1-match ban? You said 1-match, so I wasn't sure.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not sure, Russ, whether it was a... I always get confused whether a sending off sometimes is 3, is it 1, is it dangerous play? David Hulley would know exactly, and I'm sure if I looked on who scored, they would tell us the availability. But if he's not available, whether he's available or not, I don't think he should come into the 11 anyway.
Okay. Very interesting there. All right, let's go to predictions first. I'll share quickly... my poll, it had 143 votes. This is on the Cottage Talk Twitter page. Win, 73%. Draw, 15%. Loss, 12%. All right, Mike, What is your prediction for tomorrow?
Yeah, so I'm going to go for a 2-1. I think we're going to be 2-0 up, and then they're going to score with about 15 minutes left, and it's going to be, you know, by whatever nails you've got left. But, yeah, that's what I think. I think it's going to be 2-1. I think, unfortunately, it's not going to be one of the big wins like we have had recently, as much as I'd like it to be. But I still think we're going to run out the best team tomorrow.
Okay. I'm going to go 3-1. I've been wrong lately, so why not stick with my stupid prediction? So I'm going to say 3-1 to Fulham. I just think we're going to, I wouldn't say destroy this team, but I think there's an opportunity here to win comfortably. So I'm going to say 3-1. That's what I'm going with. Before we go, Mike, I just want to mention this. I want to recommend Fulham supporters that listen to this show because to contact David Holly on Twitter. First of all, follow him. It's 1966 FFC. The reason why I'm asking is because David's been on the fence on many of these predictions. I want him to make a prediction. So I want you to tweet him asking for his prediction for this upcoming match. So follow him and force him to make a prediction. So that's what I want to do. I want Fulham supporters to contact David Holly and get him to make a prediction for this upcoming match. Do you agree with me trying to push David Holly a little bit, Mike?
I don't know if I would go that far, but yes, me and David disagree on a few things, and his stock answer sometimes is I don't know, so I can't give you an answer or reply. So I'm sure if people start tweeting him, he will come back and say what he thinks. And of course, he will be right, whatever figure he comes out regarding the result tomorrow.
Listen, David's a dear friend, and this is just I'm just teasing him back and forth because you know he won't make a decision on this match. So I just thought I would mention the Fulham supporters to actually tweet him, and also follow him as well. You know, I don't want to push him in a bad way. I just want this is just a joke to him, and hopefully people will tweet him asking him to make a prediction for this match. All right, Mike. Anything final you want to say before we go?
Just to anyone who's listening, who's going tomorrow, is get behind the team, have a bit of patience, and you know, I think we'll get back on the winning ways tomorrow. And if we have any sort of plans or wanting to be in that top six, then tomorrow's a game that we have to win. After getting a decent draw away from home. And already the table is beginning to take shape. And for us to stay in contention, people know me and my stats, we need to get a win tomorrow. So, just be patient, get behind the team, and hopefully they can deliver.
Mike, if they win tomorrow, are we within range with your stats?
Yeah. If you're targeting just to get into the playoffs, which is what I'm doing, you've got to go for. I don't care how we sneak in, but I've never thought we'd be top two. But if we can get to six, you need to add. We should really have 16 points now after 10 games, and we're on 14. Which incidentally, we had a conversation before the show started. I just checked. So a year ago, under Kit, we had 12 points. So we're 2 points better. But at that time, there was already a 3-point gap between the top of the table and the bottom of the table, the halfway mark. So you can't allow gaps to appear. So you need to keep involved. So you always need to have about 1.6 points per game. And we win tomorrow, we're back on track.
Okay, very good. All right. Important match then, my friend. Thank you very much for sharing that. All right. But it is time to go. Thank you so much for joining me, Mike. For Mike Gregg, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, Mike. Have a great night.
Cheers, Russ. Speak to you soon.
Okay. Boys and